You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate
and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world.
And now, innovation thought leader
and your super fly host,
Tamara Kleinberg.
Hey there, Launch Streeters. Tamara here, your innovation guide and the person that always has a $2 bill in their wallet for good luck. I will never, ever spend it. It will always be there. All right. I was marveling the other day at how much I love with a big red heart certain brands and don't others. And it made me wonder, why do some brands find their way into my heart and some don't? I mean, the reality is it's not functionality. It's not even benefits of the product or service. I've picked a product I loved over one that was better before. I've picked the lesser, really, of the two and still felt good about the choice. So with that question in mind, I asked Mark Gutman. He's an entrepreneur, storyteller, and he used to be in Hollywood. Now he applies that power of storytelling to brands at the company Wild Story, which is a strategic brand story and agency that helps the world see what their clients see. So I had him onto the podcast and we dug into the power of story. We talked about how having a good product or service isn't enough to win anymore. In fact, having the best isn't enough to win anymore. Why vulnerability and even conflict are good for connecting with customers, and how we as humans actually trust stories over data, which is so funny because we all buy into that, you know, the numbers don't lie, look at the numbers. And while there's truth to that, we actually connect and believe story over data. It's fascinating. Okay, get your pens out for this one. Here we go. Mark, thank you so much for joining me, although apparently since we're in the same neck of the woods, we should have done it together.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm so excited to be here. And yeah, we are very close as the crow flies for sure.
Well, next time we'll do it in person. It'll be just as much fun as I know this one's going to be. So since we're new to you or you're new to Launch Street, what's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Yeah, I think that, you know, in addition to my experience in Hollywood, which people really like to talk about, I recently had a brief stint as a sponsored kiteboarder not too long ago. And I think they were trying to appeal to a new demographic. But and I might even still be up on the website. If you go to bestkites.com, you'll see me there smiling with a kite in my hand as a sponsored kiteboarder. So that's pretty interesting.
Okay, so I have to ask, were you kiteboarding before? Did you go, I'm going to do this and get a sponsor? How do they find you? Like, how do you become a sponsored kiteboarder?
Yeah, so it's been an interest of mine and a passion of mine, not to get too deep into it, but I love to spend, I'm originally from the Midwest and love to spend my summers in Michigan on the water, and picked up the sport there and met a bunch of people that were influential in the industry, and some of the people that were at the time running the sales or sales for that, you know, decided that I would be a good ambassador for the product. So it wasn't something I sought out. I do have a day job, but it's been a lot of fun. And it's a good picture.
That, oh my gosh, I cannot wait. When we're done, that's the first thing I'm going to do, by the way, is go look that up. All right, let's shift gears and talk about story and your expertise. So let's back it up though for context. Tell us a little bit about why story matters so much in business today.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's so many reasons. And just to give everyone a little bit of context, you know, my background comes from the movie. So, you know, prior to all this, I had a career as a screenwriter in Hollywood. One of my more well-known positions was working for the well-known director Oliver Stone as his story editor. So I really learn and cut my teeth and learn the craft of story there. And so I really bring that perspective as we apply it to business. And why does it matter? You know, I think that, you know, at a real basic level, you know, we as humans are all searching for meaning. We crave it. It's just how we're naturally wired. And story is the ultimate way to easily deliver that in a context and a language that we all understand. You know, the competitive landscape today is such that, like, it's almost impossible to differentiate yourself. I mean, you look at, you know, big products like even like Apple or Samsung. I mean, it really is different between those two tools than the story they're telling to their individual, you know, constituents, you know. And with Apple, you think you're cool and hip. And with Samsung, you think everyone that has an Apple is an idiot because, you know,
drinking Kool-Aid and lame.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. And but you ascribe to that and you associate with that and that becomes part of your tribe. And really at its essence, you know, story forces our buyers or our customers to choose, to make a choice. And so, you know, where we are today, you know, people aren't really like shopping or buying. They're making a choice. They come in and they have some sort of most likely pre-existing relationship with either the topic at hand, with our companies, with our competitors. And so they're making a choice. They're choosing us or not choosing us. And story is really that thing that can force that issue. And to anyone who's worried about not being chosen, that's an awesome thing too, right? Like you want to know like who your people are, who you appeal to. And, you know, I don't think Apple's losing any sleep because all those Samsung people are not choosing them.
No. And in fact, I would probably add to that and tell me if I'm right here, that having those people choose Samsung actually reinforces their story because of the difference between the two. So not having those people in their tribe is actually a good thing.
Exactly. I mean, it's just the way tribes work, right? It's like you have to have that counterbalance of not being a part of your tribe and having the opposition for your club to mean something for, you know, the things that you do to have identity. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. And it bolsters that identity that people have with their products. And we can talk a little bit about that too. But, you know, it's like really we're at a state now where products and brands, you know, by telling your customers who you are, it tells them who they are. And it's this crazy thing that like you think about that. It's like we have never associated with brands and stories of those brands more than ever. You know, if I stood up and I told you in an audience and I pointed out someone and I said, hey, your iPhone sucks. Like I haven't just insulted the iPhone. I've insulted
that
person.
No, it's very personal to me. It's very personal.
Right, right.
It's like fighting words.
Yeah, we really, by telling our customers through our story who we are as a business, it tells them who they are. And so that's also another reason it's just so, so important.
You know, it seems to me, just to date myself a little bit, I'm 45, so I'm a product of the 80s, 90s, all those good fashion years. And, you know, back in that time, it was the product or the service was good enough. And then that kind of moved into, it was about the label. And that seems like that's now moved into the story. And I think what you said before about it's so hard to differentiate yourself by your product or service these days. I mean, I think that couldn't be more true today than ever before because we can all put out a great product or service. So how do we create or craft, I guess, our story in a way that it actually stands out? How do we, I mean, there's so many layers to this question, I guess. So I'll look to you to help me unpack what I'm even asking you. But, you know, how do we figure out how to craft the story, what our story is? Like, where do we start?
Yeah. And it is a really big, it's a big one, but you know, this is going to sound a little obvious, but the place to start is through authenticity. I mean, you look at the brands that we associate with today as the most iconic or the most impactful brands. And, you know, I can list a bunch. I can say things like Apple, Amazon, Warby Parker,
Uber,
right. They all have this iconic or not really iconic, but more like a strong founder. And even though that these businesses have scaled and that they have gone on to have thousands of employees, it's that backstory, just like in a movie, right? Our main characters have this backstory that really gives them the motivation to be who they are. And so, you know, I like to always look to the past when starting, you know, this process and look, how did the, you know, business come about? What's the story behind it? What was that moment? Like, you know, as human beings, we only kind of do as much as we really need to do in life, you know, and until we're presented with a challenge or a problem or something that gets in our way, and then we will go ahead and answer that call. And so, you know, what was that for that particular business and how does that relate to the story, you know, that they're telling? You know, I think that a good story has several components and a lot of these things are foreign to business sometimes because, you know, number one is vulnerability, right? Like if you're telling a story about how you were up against it and you couldn't figure out the solution, most businesses don't want to say that. But then, aha, you know, next came the light bulb moment where it forced us to, you know, come up with X product and start this business. And so I think that, you know, your employees, your customers, they want to know where you come from and they want to know why you're doing what you're doing. It's not enough anymore to be like, hey, we're a great company and we sell widgets. You know, it's like employees and even customers in a lot of senses are dying to go home and tell their friends and family why it is what you do has meaning in the world, why you're making the world a better place. And we're even seeing that. I mean, you talked a little bit about generations. I mean, we're seeing that so much in this next generation coming through, who's going to have like the most disposable income. It's those millennials, and then right behind them, Generation Z. So, you know, a good story has vulnerability, and I'll just list out these components and we talk about them a little bit. But vulnerability, there's often drama and conflict to opposing forces. And that drama and conflict can be what I just said. Hey, like I had I was just visiting a friend today locally in town, and she makes an alternative breastfeeding pad, right? And the pads that, you know, when she had babies weren't working, so she invented a new one, and that was the inspiration, that was the drama and conflict that, you know, motivated her to start a business. And transformation, right? We have to see change. Something has to happen in a good story. And then authenticity. And we could unpack those a little more in detail, but those are the main components that a really good story should have.
I want to unpack them in a second. Before I do that, I want to back up because some thoughts were percolating as you were sharing this great stuff. So I was recently at the Women's Food Service Forum conference. It was 3,000 women in food service, everything from restaurants to fast food to white labeling, to all of that. And, you know, after I was keynote about innovation, and after I was talking to a bunch of different ones, and what struck me was that they are coming from B2B, right? Not B2C, and business to business for those out there who don't know it, or versus business to consumer. So they're selling to another company versus direct to consumer. And sometimes, you know, from them, you get a little bit of pushback of, well, I don't like the branding's not as important to us. We're not selling to consumers. Right. We're not selling to people. We're selling to other companies. And my response back is always, right, but who's signing that contract? It's a person. It's still people. And I'd love to get your perspective on why, even in those unsexy ones, like not the ones that we hear about in Fast Company, right? Not Warby Parker or Amazon or even REI, which are all amazing. We can learn a lot from them. But even for all these other unsexy industries and companies, why it matters just as much for them.
Yeah, and I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said that, like, who's buying, right? Yeah. And so it's those people, you know, the easy thing, and here's the other thing, it's really easy for us in the way we've been schooled throughout the years to fall back into spreadsheets, numbers, and data. And that's all important, but, you know, most people, like, when they see numbers and data, they instantly don't trust it. They think, you know, especially when we're presenting to someone, they know that if I'm a salesperson and I'm coming in with my data, that, you know, how do I know that that's good data? And actually, there's a company called Edelman, one of the biggest communication firms in the world. They have this thing called the Trust Barometer. And even this year, the trust is at an all-time low, right? So you're coming in because people are just coming in with these facts and these figures. And so I'm not saying, and you know, and we do a lot of work with clients where we help them with actually building storified presentations. But you know, so you have to come in and present and present the data. But if you can wrap that in a storied way to give a sense of like what could be and build excitement before you get to that data, that can be really beneficial in those B2B. And I'll give like a real kind of clear example. It's like, you know, we help companies a lot, raise money. And if we go in and all these people going in asking for money, if they go in and they lead with the numbers, the VCs come back and they say, your numbers are wrong. Thanks for coming. Why don't you grab a cappuccino on your way out? And thanks for coming. So if we lead with a story and we storify the vision of what they're trying to sell and then support it with the numbers, typically the VCs still tell us our numbers are wrong, right?
Yeah, well, that's their job.
That's their job. Yeah. But they want to help us. They've invested, they've bought the story. So then they try to make those numbers work. And then we start to have a conversation, and that those are the successful companies that are raising money. And so very much the same way you might go into a big deal. You know, if you can lead with a story and connect with the person on the other end of the table and on a real human level and present that story in a way that is compelling and moves them to emotion and buy in emotionally to what you're selling, then you have a lot more leeway when it comes to commercial terms that may not be ideal to be in the beginning, right? They're going to come back and say, oh, I really want to work with you, but those commercial terms aren't the right ones. And you can say, great, let's work on that versus, you know what, your pricing's wrong, or we don't believe you, or what, you know, the million other answers that'll happen all around. Your commercial terms are too long. Like, they're just looking for an excuse to say no.
Isn't that fascinating? So if I hear you right, we don't trust data just presented to us as data, which is so funny because what's that old phrase? The math doesn't lie, numbers don't lie. But we don't believe it. But if we wrap it in a story, we're more likely at least to be open to it and trust it.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's fascinating to me.
Yeah. And you know, and I think that, you know, before everyone is up in arms at data, you know, we don't trust data. Like, you know, if we're internal in a company and you and I are talking and you and I have trust, then yeah, and you present me a spreadsheet. But even then, you know, you might have an agenda with inside the company for how you present that data. I mean, in a lot of ways, you could argue that all data is skewed anyways, because it's being generated and presented from a certain perspective.
Right. Well, you're not gonna share the bad data, right? Nobody does that. It's kind of like giving a bad reference. Nobody does that.
Exactly.
I want to talk a little bit about Wild Story, but before I do that, I'm wondering if you can take us through a brand story, maybe one of your clients that you've worked with, or someone that you think is out there just crushing it, and just unpack a little bit of those elements that go into the story so that we can really identify kind of, you know, you were saying earlier about the transformation, the conflict. Like, I'd love to hear it in an actual story so that we can identify those pieces.
Yeah. You know, we're working on some right now, but I think one, I'm actually prepping to do a video on this, so it's really timely, I'm a big fan of Warby Parker, and I bring them up. I work with a lot of lifestyle brands myself. And, you know, I just happened to get glasses and I was really exposed to the brand, and there were some things Yeah. And there was things that were really interesting to me. They almost seemed a little manufactured, right? Because they've got this story about these three or four guys that, they had a problem, with eyeglasses. So here's the conflict we're talking about, right? And they had a problem around eyeglasses, and they had lost their eyeglasses, and they didn't want to spend this money. And so they decided to tackle this project. But then they have this weird thing that they also give a pair when you buy a pair. And that kind of, to me, feels like, isn't everyone doing that? Isn't that just like a glob on for to gain positive vibes from the, you know, the buyers? But it really, and getting back to this idea about authenticity, you know, the story behind that is when the two of the founders decided to get into this project, the other person they knew happened to be working at a eye care a charity, and had that knowledge, and said, I will come and bring you my knowledge of how to manufacture and who the manufacturers are and the suppliers and how to get this done, if we can do something where we help support my charity and my passion of helping people who need eyeglasses. So that's like authentic, like that works. And like, you don't even know why it works. You believe it. And even when I looked at it, I was not totally distrustful, because it worked really well for Warby Parker. And I just didn't know why, but like, I think the big takeaway is, when done right, these things happen and we don't really even notice it, right? We have this feeling. And, you know, have you ever had someone where, you know, the opposite is, if you've ever had someone where you're like, you know what, I just don't trust Mark. And you tell like your friend or your spouse or something, and they're like, why not? And you're like, I don't know. I don't feel right. Like, there's something about him that, like, you know, and I can't even place my finger on it. And what that really is that's like our spidey senses. That's our intuition, because something's incongruent in the story that I'm sending out there. And we have this ability to really piece that all together. Is just part of our DNA and how we're wired. And so back to Warby Parker, they didn't have that spidey sense, right? I was just more like looking at it from a academic standpoint, like, why is that working? You know, they do a lot of good things. When you get a pair of glasses, you get their story in 100 words put on a microfiber cloth, which I have right in front of me, and they tell you the whole story. And so, you know, again, that's a way for you to connect with the brand. When you go into their retail location in Boulder, they have all these like creative books and that almost take up as much retail space as the glasses. And, you know, when I put on a pair of these glasses, right, like, I feel really cool. Like, I feel sort of hip, and that's a pretty big stretch, right? So I'm identifying with the brand, and I think the brands that do it really well, they go through this process. And I love that you have, and I want to dive into this a little bit, you know, these archetypes that you use in your assessment. And we do a lot of the same thing with, you know, traditional branding type archetypes. Mm-hmm. We help them, you know, figure out their vision and where they're going. You know, customers buy a strong vision of where you're going, as well as do your employees and your values, you know, and the values that Warby Parker shares. And so they, you know, they have a very strong idea of who they are. And this story comes out. So they have their origin story, which follows, you know, we can talk about how that works in a normal story sort of framework and all that sort of thing. But then in a business, it kind of breaks from tradition. We don't follow that hero's journey in every part of our business. And what we do is we look for all those customer touch points where we're being authentic with our story. And if we're not, using that lens of what our story is to say, okay, how do we interact with customers? What does our retail store look like? What does our PowerPoint deck look like when we go to, you know, a B2B situation, all these different things. What shows are we showing up at? Trade shows? Where are we speaking? All these things are what support your story that people are taking in, processing, and making judgments about you and deciding who you are in the world as a business and a person.
So I'm curious, you know, just a little bit about what you do at Wild Story. And what I'm curious about is when clients call you, potential clients, what pain are they picking up the phone to talk to you about? What do they want you to solve? You know, I'm wondering when they recognize, hey, we need to work on our story because something is wrong here, you know? Yeah. I don't know if that's an output of, or maybe they don't know that. Maybe they just know sales are dropping, competition is coming in, customer needs have changed. How does that work and how do you help them?
They do. Yeah. I mean, the big answer, the big idea is we help clients prepare for growth by guiding them through the difficult process of defining their identity, then developing the language to communicate that, and then helping them create the tools to standardize the messaging. But what is coming out of that is usually there's some sort of an event. And that event could be the business has taken on money. It could be that there's right now we're working with a company where there was a big acquisition and they're bringing two organizations together and they have to decide how to go forward. That event could be like, hey, we want to get to the next level and we just don't really know how, because as we scale, we start to dilute ourselves. And, you know, I call it the Zoolander effect. Everyone's like, who am I, right? Like, who am I as a business? And then how do we articulate that so we can go? And so it's interesting, you know, I've been doing this a while and recently people are coming and saying, wow, like I need to tell my story better. And I'll be like, well, tell me about that. And for most people, like I get, you know, I ask 10 people, I get 10 different answers of what they think that is. But typically, you know, it's this idea that they are gearing up for growth or they've had an event where they're need to come together and bring two sides of the business together. And I know you do a lot of culture work and things like that. It really, you know, to me, it's kind of the same product, but the entry point, it could either be like they look at it as a cultural issue, so it's like internal storytelling, or they look at it as a brand story / marketing messaging problem. And then it, you know, we just kind of take them through the same process with just a different goal in mind.
It seems like too, and correct me if I'm wrong, that having a really not just strong, but clear story internally helps you A, attract the right people, and B, keep them engaged. But I think also the output of that then becomes you have these incredible advocates. Like just to go back to, you know, talking about Apple in the beginning, people who work at Apple know what Apple's about and they sing their biggest praises. Like they're the best marketing they could ever have out there in the world. It seems like starting at ground level with story helps you do all that.
Absolutely. And you know, you've taken the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what I would have said about that, as well as like, you can also trust that given any situation, they're going to do the right thing to communicate the right story at any given time. So if they're out in the world and they're at a cocktail party and they say, tell me about, you know, your company, they're going to do the right thing. But also if they're working with a customer, if they're out in the field, if they're working with another company, like that is all going to come out and through how they talk about the company. And what we miss is that, you know, we need to arm our employees with that story. I think so many businesses just assume that they have it. So many businesses throw it up on maybe an artifact on the wall or an employee handbook and say, here you go. But, you know, one thing that we also do in that process when we start to work with companies to tell that story is have employees really think about their own story and how it relates back to the business. And, you know, I'm a big believer that kind of everything that we do works to where we are, whether consciously or unconsciously. And that's not to say, you know, the first thing I get is employers are like, well, my whole life hasn't been driving to this particular situation.
And, to this moment right now, Mark, right now.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't think that at all. But I think we can look back and connect the dots into ways why where we're at and also where we're going. So you can take these same principles of a strong backstory, where we're at now and a strong future vision. You can apply them to your business, but you can also apply them personally or through your employees so that they then feel much more connected and understand, you know, their meaning and place within the company too, especially in really big businesses, right?
Yeah, totally. Okay, there's two tangents I want to go off on with you. The first one is I just want to loop back to something you said about all the different customer touch points and how they all matter. And for Launch Street out there, I want you to really think about that, because like, how many times have we engaged with a business? And this just actually happened to me. So I bought some knee-high socks for a competition, a fitness competition I have to do this weekend. So I need the socks like by Friday. And they're themed Western. That's a long story we'll get into offline. But point being, I need the socks. And their website was super friendly. It was all like, we're here for you, all approachable. That's the story I got. I haven't gotten the socks. So I sent them a Facebook message, because that's how you chat with them. And they couldn't have been more terse with me. And they were fine, but they didn't match the original story. And I started to get that weird feeling of something's not right here. They're not who they say they are. And it was a tiny little thing, right? It was a Facebook message app. It wasn't really communicative. It took them a long time to get back to me. All those little things add up, don't they? And that's what makes you in your gut go, something's not right here.
Totally, totally. And you know, when we personally tell our stories, like when I tell you about myself at a party, you know, it's quid pro quo. I tell you about myself, which means you then tell me about yourself. And what we're really trying to do, right, is like find, you know, shared experiences. We're trying to relate to one another. We're trying to find shared values. And those are really the concepts. And so in your interaction, you know, those shared values that you felt in the first touch point weren't matched on Facebook. And it really bums you out. And we're talking about it here on a podcast.
Right. Like now they're really screwed.
Right. It matters, right? Like, there's no insignificant touch. And we're all judging this stuff all the time. And we're all talking about it. And we're creating so much content. We're posting about it. And like, you need to honor that story and be authentic with your audience. And if you are, they'll, by the way, give you a ton of leeway when you screw up as well.
That's right.
Especially when you own it, right? And you say, look, I'm sorry, you know, here's why this happened and I'll fix it and I'll make it right. But if you are incongruent, then you start to get the spidey senses like, hey, this isn't right. And I don't know if I want to continue doing business with them.
Yeah. And you know, I'll give you one other example and then I want to flip to the other tangent. I'm going to throw Frontier Airlines under the bus because they drive me bonkers. Their whole marketing campaign, A Whole New Animal, which would lead you to believe they're going to be different than everybody else in the industry. That's the story. And then I get on their planes and I'm like, this is no different than everybody else. Why are you telling me one thing here and doing another? Change your story, because you're driving me crazy. So, but that's another example of, you know, the story. And when the story sounds amazing and you don't live up to it, it almost makes it worse. Now I avoid Frontier every chance I get.
Yeah, it's false. And they don't have, you know, really many other chances to regain your loyalty, right?
No, not much.
And, you know, so yeah, I mean, maybe they're a whole nother animal, means they're like trying to be the world's worst airline, right?
That should be on their tails, not a, you know, tiger and a dolphin. You know, it's I want to loop back to what you said in the beginning, though, because it's really is about that, about being authentic and living it across your business. It's not just a marketing one pager. Your story becomes how you do business.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we find is, you know, there's this other thing where leaders or founders will come in and you'll be working on a project. And, you know, tell me if you've ever heard this, you're working on this project and the leader comes in and says, I don't like that. And the team goes, great. Why? And they go, I don't know. I just don't like that, right? But it's not right, and I want more of this. But it's like, you know, some sort of nebulous, like it's just no direction. Well, because there's no context and language around what right is, right? And so if you have a strong story and a strong foundation, that literally can become your lens and your business operating system to make all those decisions and say, okay, are we living authentically? Does this new project, you know, fit with the story that we're telling? Does, you know, this new product line, does this new way that we're going to interact with our customers feel authentic to our story? And it's a great, great litmus test and a great way to bring some common nomenclature to to leadership's teams so they can go ahead and make those types of decisions.
Yeah. So I want to real quickly, because you mentioned it before, talk about your innovator archetype. So you're futuristic inquisitive, which I can totally hear. It's super fascinating. The futuristic side is being able to see the vision, see 10 steps ahead, innovate in Tomorrowland while the rest of us are solving yesterday's problems. You innovate in the questions, not the answers. So challenging assumptions, asking why. People like you, and I can hear it, again, it's so fascinating, tend to be really good at innovation because you pull back the layers of the onion and never just settle for that surface level stuff. I'm just curious, right? Does that totally sound like you? I can hear like what you're saying.
It does. It does, for sure.
I'm just curious how your ability to see 10 steps ahead and challenge assumptions, how that has helped you build stories and helps your clients.
Yeah, well, for me, story, well, you know, in back in the day when it was fictional stories, right? Every movie starts with this premise, what if? Dot, dot, dot. And so that's how you start it there. What if a shark attacked a beach town in off the islands of Cape Cod or something, right? And, you know, that's how every movie starts. And so applying that to business, you know, it really, you know, we get stuck in our ruts. We get stuck in the ways of doing things. We can only, you know, some people call it being snowblind or whatever, but like, you know, really having the ability to work with clients and say, well, what if it looked like this? You know, what if you broke from a traditional story of doing what everyone else does and you really planted your flag and separated yourself from the competition? You know, if I was an insurance company 20 years ago and I said, what if instead of being like every other insurance company and being all rigid and kind of, you know, like we're this real responsible company, what if we were just like funny? What if we just, you know, every touch point was humor? Right. And that was probably a really bold decision.
I mean, I'm sure the people on the other side of the table were like, oh, what?
Right. And now you look at Geico, right? And they have a real identifiable brand that stands out in a very crowded marketplace. And they tell a corporate story of that and how they're funny and how they take care of you. And so it doesn't make you less reliable. I think that's the biggest fear that people have. And so painting that vision for, like, you know, it's scary for people to lean into their authentic self and to plant a flag. And everyone's always afraid of leaving money on the table. And I think we all know inherently that's false, that the more beige we are, the less appealing we are. But it's also scary to pick a side. And so helping to paint a picture with clients for sure and let them know that these are potential outcomes, I think is a good part of my futuristic archetype. I mean, I love dreaming about the future anyways. Like when I read that after I took the test, I just thought it was hilarious. I was like, yep, that's me.
Hold on.
Like,
I need to go daydream for a minute. I'll be right back.
Yeah. I think it said to like lean into that. I was like, I have to lean out of that.
Right. I've got too much of it. I got to do something now.
Exactly.
You know, what you said right now was so powerful though about, you know, we're so afraid. We have such a fear of leaning into our own authenticity because some people aren't going to like it. And we've got to let go of those people, that money, that tribe. And in the end, it's okay. And if we look at the brands and the businesses that we love, they're the ones that have done that. Yet for us, it's really scary.
It is. And, you know, especially when we see this like on the culture side, there's always this moment where leaders have to say, like, are we going to do this and, you know, be ourselves? And I never advocate for like saying, hey, this is just the way it is. But there is going to be some forced like friction and attrition. And people are always talking about buy-in. And I don't really want people to like buy in, right? Like I want people to believe. I want people to feel what we're doing and not just be like, okay, like that sounds pretty good, you know? And, you know, so there is always this moment of courage where you have to say, look, I understand there's going to be some friction that as we come into this new direction, you know, we might lose some people, right? But over the long haul, we're going to get the right people. We might lose some customers as well, right? But over the long term, we're going to attract the best employees, the best ideal customers, and we're going to be set up for the future.
So I have to apologize for Launch Streeters because I ping-ponged a little bit on this interview because there's so much good stuff here to pull out of you, Mark. But I wanted to go back because I said there were two tangents that I wanted to go down. And we did one and we didn't do the other one. So the other one is, it's funny, this is a very timely conversation because over at Launch Street, we are right now in the process of doing a lot of work on our story. Because what I came to realize is that our story sucks. And I am so embarrassed to admit that, especially talking to you, but it's true. I mean, we do cool stuff and we have great products and services, but the way we've wrapped it up is actually more confusing than it needs to be. Obviously, it's confusion is never good. And the reason we actually came to realize that is because we did this whole website redo and we did all this SEO work. So we had all these people coming to our site, but they weren't converting. And that told me that we had a communication problem. And so we're in the process of doing that. And it's painful, right? It's kind of painful to realize, wow, I'm A, not as clear as I thought I was. And B, I'm not even really sharing the full story. Like, shame on me. I tried to not pretty it up. That's not right. But professionalize it, I guess, to your kind of earlier point. What are those pain points that can help you realize that maybe, hey, it's time for some story work? Like, we talked a little bit about some of them, but what else do you see out there as the, you know what, Tamara and Launch Readers, it's time for you to pay attention? Because, you know, for us, it was the website when we were like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, there's that. There's if you're confused as to literally, as I mentioned before, that Zoolander effect. If you're having this like identity crisis, and you're like, I'm not really sure who I am, who our company is anymore. You know, we work with a lot of entrepreneurial led companies, and what happens is, as entrepreneurs, we just we start a business. We get going, we push so hard, and then one day, if we're lucky, we wake up and we've got a business that has a couple million in revenue, right? And we go, and you think like that it was gonna be easier. So like when you start, you're like, if I just get to a couple million in revenue, my life is totally gonna be so awesome. Yeah. I'm gonna have
it's like it just because you can get to a million, then you can get to 10, no problem.
Yeah. And you're like, I'm gonna take more money out of the business.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have a team. My weekend's back, I'm gonna be on vacations, I'm gonna like, this is gonna be great. And like the reality is that's like not the case. And so that's kind of one of the pain points. It's like they wake up and they're like, all right,
we're
not growing, and as I prepare, I've got to hand this off. But I feel like every time I hand this off, I'm the only one that can really tell the story, close the deals, go out and represent the company accurately. And, you know, you're just a bottleneck at that point. And so that's a huge pain point. We're like, okay, well, now we need to work with, the company to help tell that story so that you can grow and scale and start to spread that message through other people, not just yourself.
You had said something on I think it was an article I read somewhere about that there's this magical link between culture and your brand story. What's that link?
Yeah. And so, you know, for me, and that's kind of what I was alluding to when I was talking about, we kind of have the same product with two different entry points. I mean, it's a very know thyself idea. Like, you can't go out and tell your brand story until you really know who you are and what your house is all about. And, you know, and is that story authentic and is it resonating internally so that you'll have the momentum and the energy to tell that story externally? And so, a lot of times you can have culture problems if you're telling an external brand story and it's not ringing true with your employees. You know, a lot of times, like I'm working with another client right now who tells every person that they hire that this is going to be a cool Colorado company. You're going to have days off. Work from home. You're going to do all this cool stuff, right? Like we always kind of have this vision of this Colorado company. But like when I really pressed him on it, you know, he kind of wants to run the business like a restaurant. In terms of like how they come in and work, and I don't really think that's wrong, right? What I do think is wrong is it's incongruent, right? You know, and people can feel that, and you know, and from my work with around culture, and it's not really that much different than what we just talked about with trust externally for your brand story. It's like the best cultures have safety and trust. And if you're not generating that and people aren't feeling safe in their job or aren't feeling a part of the tribe, then there's really no point in telling that story externally. It's just not going to hold up. It's going to feel like a flimsy house of cards, right?
Yeah. So that's fascinating to me because I think in our case, we had it right internally. Our team really is an incredible team of motivated people who are enthused to be there every day. And they're the ones that really pointed it out to me. And the fact that they were willing to do that, they were like, hey, Tamara, we know you're the founder and the president, and this is your baby, but your baby has a problem, which is great, I think. But I love what you're saying about you start inside to go outside. And I think the mistake that I see a lot of companies make, and tell me if you see this in your world, is they actually go, they start outside to try to go inside, if that makes sense.
Always. Yep.
Yeah.
You got it exactly right. That's what we think we need to do. We think we need to start with the customer. And I really believe you start internally with the business. And then we go like, you know, we kind of have like what we call this inner layer, which is the DNA, which is all this stuff we're talking about, like culture and all this real deep emotional stuff. And then, you have the external about the company, which is your products and services you sell and how you go to market that, you know, I never want people to get the impression that that's not important. We have those two elements. And once we kind of get that straight, then we can start to look at our customers. And a big part of the work we do on that side is just really, really, like people say they do this, they do avatars, right? But when they do avatars, most of the time, or personas, it's like a Facebook version. It's like, you know, male, 44, 3 kids, lives in Colorado, you know, like they don't really put themselves in the shoes of the customer. They don't really develop this empathy. And one thing I love to do that your audience can do themselves right now is make a journal entry, just an open journal entry, as if you were your customer, and you cannot mention your products and services at all.
Oh, interesting.
And it's very interesting because what people mostly want to do is, right, I woke up today and all I could think about was Launch Street.
Right.
And it was the best.
I'm sure that's what my customers do.
Yeah, right. But like the point being is for people to realize that our products and services are very small part of their lives and how and where do they fit into their lives and start to think of them as real people and what they're really concerned about and what their story is and, you know, and where they're coming from. And when you do that, you can start to think about telling your story and or other stories within your business that are going to appeal to them.
I think I'm just taking note as you talk. I thought that was like the golden nugget of insight right there. So Launch Readers, if you're out there, do that journal entry and realize who your customer really is, who your employees really are, and where you fit into that. Because you're right, we're not the most important thing to them. And if anything, I hope that we can help and guide and enable our customers. But the truth is, I'm not their end all be all. They've got a million other things that have to happen before 8 a.m., before I even get on the radar.
Same with your employees. You know, like I work with so many businesses that go through some of this transformational work, and then they want to present about why the company is so great back to the employees because they went through this work. And, you know, the employees are thinking, well, how do I fit into this? How does this appeal to me? So it's just a real, like, it's a nuance, it's a shift, but like having those leaders make presentations that are really thoughtful about their audience, right? And about those employees and why it matters to them and why this is good for them. And that makes all the difference in the world. I mean, that is the difference between, you know, people that are enthused and excited and fired up to go work with you and people that are like, well, this is just, you know, all about them. And when I say them, I mean like the leadership team. And yeah. I've been in situations with both, right?
Yeah, totally. And I would add to that and say that if you as a company or as a leader truly want to stand out in the marketplace, but also just harness the change that's happening around us, because none of us, you know, can be comfortable or complacent anymore, you need your people inside your organization to be a part of that story, to get the story and to be enthused to be there, because they're the ones who are going to solve the problems and find the opportunities. You can't do it alone. But without that level of enthusiasm from your employees, it doesn't happen.
Totally. 100%. I couldn't agree more.
All right. So before we end, where can people go to connect with you and learn more?
Yeah. Best place is just at our website, wildstory.com. We have some downloads there to kind of start your story framework. And through there, if people are interested, we do have a Facebook group that a private Facebook group that's, you know, no charge, where I just, you know, for me, what I get out of it is I love to hear what people's problems are, right? And then and in exchange, I love to help solve them in that group. So it works really well. And that's another place if people are interested. But, you know, if they go to our website and kind of go through that process, they'll get invited to that group as well.
I love your website, by the way. I looked at it a few times just because I find it visually very engaging.
And
I would just tell listeners out there that they have this great Looking to Transform Your Business, Get the Hollywood Story Secrets, that book, Captivate and Connect. I'm reading it off your site right now. You're instantly to your customers. So, and then a little button that says, yes, send me the secrets. I would click on that button and I would get it. So I just want to tell people that because I thought it was so good. The last question for you is, what's one thing Launch Streeters can do right now to begin incorporating their story into their work?
Yeah, I think that they can start thinking about some of those story elements we talked about in the beginning. But like, I would think about like why your company exists. And I would go back to that moment that fired you up to start a business or to get into business. And then you can start to tell that story. And that story, you know, you can tell that story before a business meeting. You can tell that story anytime you start to speak, right? It really is, you can use it as your presentation. And I would have them just think about their backstory and how it applies to their business. And then I know it's not one thing, but the second thing is they could really start to think about how are they going to articulate that future vision of where the business is going as it's supported by the backstory. And you know, that's all people want. Like it's not that complicated. People tend to love to overcomplicate it, but we just need to own it and be, you know, and everyone thinks like, was my story interesting? Like, I don't know. Yes, it is. It's your story. It's authentic. It's the original language of how we communicate, and just start telling it.
I love what you just said about the fact that we question it before we even get it out into the world. We're putting so many layers of judgment on it, and it's just us being us.
Yeah, it's really easy, but really hard at the same time. I mean, I will acknowledge that.
For yeah. Sure. Mark, thank you so much. This has been so insightful. And I'm looking forward to taking some of the notes that I just wrote from this podcast as we go back and look at our story for our business. And what that, you know, I heard you say it a few times now, what was that moment that had you create the business? I don't know that we've done the work to really not just dig that up, but communicate it. So I'm pretty excited to get to work after this podcast.
Oh, Tamara, awesome. I'm so happy to be here, and I hope it was of value.
And that's a wrap. So much good stuff. Launch Streeters, if you want to get your innovative ideas moving forward, apply the power of story. If you want to connect your innovative ideas to the bottom line of your company, find the story that you can wrap the data in. So here's what I want you to do. Here's your action. I want you to practice telling a story. Find the conflict you're going to resolve, the journey, the solution. Story is so powerful. Tamara, out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.